Hey everyone, it's Editing Hoots, just at the top of the episode here. I think every episode of Respect the Dead comes with a kind of general blanket content warning, because we usually talk about terrible people. And as you can probably guess by the title of this episode, this episode's no different. But I just wanted to come in with a gentle reminder that this one is especially bad. This one's one of, if not the worst we've ever done, depending on what really gets under your skin. I don't know. We talk about genocide and rape and a whole bunch of really awful things. So if you need to, if you need to take care of yourself, feel free to skip this one. If you venture ahead with the episode and decide at any point that you want to drop out, you know, we're not your mom. We're not we're not your dad. We're not gonna tell you what to do. we love you. Take care of yourself, and we'll see you at the next episode.
Welcome back to Respect the Dead, the podcast where we don't.
Ready? It's no surprise that everyone celebrated your demise, and now worms are eating your eyes. So don't you worry your rotting head as you sleep in your sodden bed. It's time to respect.
Mandy's turkey was so fucked up.
What? Do it again? Do it again? Sorry, that's not a turkey. That's like a female Wookiee from Star Wars.
You think I would know? I've met like many wild turkeys. Like at my old job.
I thought you were going to say Wookiees.
I've met many Wookiees.
My best friend's a Wookiee.
I've met many wild Wookiees.
Anyway. My ex-boyfriend is a Wookiee. So when I say something very anti-Wookiee here...
I have permission.
Like, don't call me a racist. Hey guys, my name is Hoots.
I'm Kaylin.
And I'm Mandy.
Kaylin and Mandy, what's your favorite alien invasion movie?
Ooh, okay.
It's a good question. It's a hard question.
I'm not going to give you a movie because Animorphs exists.
Are they aliens?
Yeah. Well, the Animorphs aren't, but the people they're fighting are.
The Yurks.
Yeah.
Okay. That still counts. It doesn't have to be a movie. It could be a novel series. Yeah.
There's like 70 books and like 60 episodes of a TV show. I'm like, that's got to be enough.
That counts.
I think I have to go with the classic 1979 Invasion of the Body Snatchers that had Donald Sutherland in it.
It's so good.
It's such a good movie. So good.
It's all about that last scene. So good.
Yeah.
That's a betrayal to Rachel and Tobias, Mandy. You should be literally ashamed of yourself. She died for you.
Sorry, Mandy couldn't say the same thing that you did because that would be boring. It would be bad content for our podcast.
Yeah, that was you took Animorphs, so I was trying to choose something different. I was trying to be unique.
There's enough Animorphs for the rest of us. We're socialists or whatever.
You took the whole Animorphs series. You didn't say like Animorphs Volume 6 or whatever. I don't know. I don't listen to you. Your freak novel series.
Fine. My favorite alien invasion story is the Andalite Chronicles. You happy, Kaylin?
Oh, yes. That's one of the best books.
It is one of the best books.
I read American Girls, so I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
Hoots is like, I'm cute and pretty. I'm not into this nerd shit.
I stand.
I'm trying to think. I think mine... might be Mars Attacks, but when I was little, I really liked Mars Attacks, but I was really afraid of the scene where she bites his finger off and spits it into the
fucking
aquarium.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I do.
But like, I was terrified of that scene specifically. Like when they were like evaporating several of people, like turning them into dust. I was like, this is fine. But the finger really freaked me out. And I haven't watched it since I was a kid, but I do remember that I really liked it back then. The alien invasion genre
is an evolution of the invasion genre that became popular in the 19th century in Britain, especially. So, like, the idea behind the behind invasion literature was basically like, what if another nation treated the British the way the British Empire treated everyone else? So there were like lots of novels that were like, oh my God, like, what if Turkey invaded us right now? That'd be so scary, right? It was like, it was very Handmaid's Tale. Like, what if what happened to Black women happened to white women? That'd be fucking horrifying.
Be terrifying, yeah.
So that was like a huge deal in the 19th century. And H.G. Wells's War of the Worlds, published in 1898, was one of, if not the earliest piece of invasion literature that like changed the mold by featuring beings from another world colonizing and genociding Earth.
Okay.
So like that's how we got like the kind of like modern in the 19th century there were lots of like avenues that led us to the modern sci-fi genre. The first one that we tend to recognize is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
H.G. Wells's War of the Worlds was like another big like sci-fi genre that came out of the 19th century that was specifically like an offshoot of the invasion genre specifically. And even though I made fun of that genre, like it was like criticizing, it was satirizing and also seriously criticizing like centuries of British colonialism.
Yeah.
And today's subject was exactly the kind of alien monster that invasion literature of the 19th century was criticizing. But in spite of this, he's still celebrated as a hero by much of the United States. Today, we are dragging the fetid corpse of Christopher Columbus.
Yes!
Drag it across an entire fucking ocean.
Do it.
He's so bad. He's so bad. And just as a warning at the top, Christopher Columbus is so bad and so shit that he could really like kind of be his own podcast series.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like in this episode, I'm going to be glossing over a lot of events and a lot of the atrocities that he committed in his life because there's just like simply too much to get through. And like while I was willing to spend like two episodes on Coco Chanel, I am not willing to give Christopher Columbus that much time because like Coco Chanel had a bunch of like petty funny stuff like relationship drama that we could make fun of. Whereas like everything that I'm going to talk about today is very sad.
Yeah, so it's just going to be a bummer the whole time.
It's going to be a real bummer and I'm not even going to get to it all. But he could be his own spin-off series. Christopher Columbus was born sometime between July 25th and Halloween 1451 in Genoa. So he was born sometime in the summer of 1451 in Genoa.
I love when it's so long ago that we have to be like, so the leaves were on the ground.
There were no records. We don't know. But we know he was born sometime between the summer and the autumn.
Somewhere in there.
We've got a like a 4-month period. Columbus was a commoner and a lot of his early life is pretty obscure, like his birth date. But according to Columbus, he started sailing around the age of 14 and most scholars believe that he traveled pretty widely in his early life, as far north as the British Isles and as far south as West Africa around what is now Ghana. In his early 20s, he began an apprenticeship as a business agent for the wealthy Spinola, Centurione, and Di Negro families. So this is like back when like there wasn't a unified Italy until the 19th century.
Yeah.
So like back in the 15th century, it was just like a bunch of city-states that were basically governed by like a bunch of like wealthy families, like the Medici family and that kind of thing. So he was like an apprentice for some like wealthy merchant families. And that's how he kind of like worked his way up in the world. So they were in important Genoese political families. And it is through his work with the Centurione family specifically that he ended up moving to Portugal in 1477. While living in Portugal, he met and married a noblewoman from Madeira, Felipa Perestreio e Moniz. I don't speak Portuguese, so I'm so sorry if I pronounce that wrong.
Sorry, Portuguese besties.
Sorry, Portuguese besties. I, like, barely know Spanish pronunciation because I live in Los Angeles, and I don't know Portuguese pronunciation at all. So she would bear him one of his two sons, Diego. His other son, Fernando, was born of his Castilian mistress, Beatriz Enriquez de Arana. So Columbus was not formally educated, but he was pretty ambitiously self-taught. In addition to the Genoese dialect he most likely was raised speaking, Columbus learned Latin, Portuguese, and Castilian, and he read extensively about geography, astronomy, and history. And one of the most common misconceptions about Columbus was that he was like the first or one of the first people to believe in a spherical Earth. That's like what we're taught in most – what we were taught as millennials in most like American schools.
Really?
I don't know if they're taught that nowadays, but what we were taught is like he was one of the first people to believe in a spherical Earth. And that's why he knew it was possible to sail west to get to quote unquote Asia. But in fact, spherical Earth had been basically a known fact since antiquity and was pretty widely accepted during Columbus's time. The reason that people didn't try to sail west to reach Asia was because they generally understood that no expedition at the time could make the journey without running out of food and fresh water.
Yeah.
Like they were like, the Earth is too big to
do. It was far.
Yeah.
Right.
And Columbus.
We don't want to die.
Columbus wanted to do that basically because he made an error in calculations. He believed that the westward distance from the Canary Islands in Spain to Japan was only about 2,800 miles, when in fact it's about 12,200 miles.
So like 10,000 miles. Yeah.
So about a 10,000 mile difference.
A little overcorrection.
A little off.
So another common misconception, at least in the United States, was that Columbus's motivations for westward circumnavigation was either just like in the spirit of exploration and discovery and like more flattering depictions of Columbus or greed in less flattering depictions of him. But according to Carol Delaney, Department of Cultural and Social Anthropology at Stanford, religious extremism actually played a huge part in his motivations to cross the Atlantic and to circumnavigate the globe, which circumnavigate in like huge quotes there because he never actually accomplished this, but he died believing that he had.
Right.
He was a religious extremist. In an excerpt from a diary on December 26th, 1942, he wrote that he wanted to find gold and spices, quote, in such quantity that the sovereigns will undertake and prepare to conquer the Holy Sepulchre. For thus I urged your highnesses to spend all the profits of this, my enterprise, on the conquest of Jerusalem. So he essentially wanted Europeans to launch another crusade against the Muslims. And he planned to reclaim Jerusalem. And he planned to finance the crusade with gold and spices from Asia.
Okay.
But he never actually reached Asia.
Yeah.
When someone wants to do a crusade.
Yeah. And he was born in like a post-crusades world because he was born in like the late, the second half of the 15th century. And there had been like hundreds of years of crusades before that. He was born like in the fallout of the like change from Constantinople to Istanbul, in the fallout of like the spice road to like China had kind of fallen just before his birth. So he was born into a world in which they were like, there was this great time when there was like lots of trade between the East and the West, and there isn't anymore, and we can get it back by killing all the Ottomans. Oh my God. So Christopher Columbus begins shopping around his idea of sailing west to Asia around 1884.
Editing hoots here. When I said 1848 and 1884, I definitely meant 1448 as my first mistake, and then 1484 as the correct number. I'm just, listen, I really struggle with numbers in this episode.
He first approached King John II of Portugal, whose advisors immediately shut it down because they were like, there's no way in hell that the journey from Spain to Japan is only 2,800 miles.
Like, have you considered you're a fucking moron?
Yeah. They were like,
they're like, your math seems really off.
They were like, I'm just thinking about like how long it takes to get there over land. And I'm thinking if we head over sea, it will take just as long. And that distance is not 2,800 miles, sweetie.
Right.
So then Christopher Columbus went to Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain, who had just presided over the unification of Spain and were in pretty dire need of cash. The unification of Spain, it should be noted, is where we got like the Spanish Inquisition. The region that would become Spain had a huge Islamic population. Like if you go to like southern Spain, especially nowadays, like by the Mediterranean, like there are so many buildings that were erected by like medieval like Muslims. Like it was huge Islamic outpost. And there was like also a pretty sizable Jewish population before the 15th century. And the unification of Spain was just this brutal process of forced exiles, forcible conversions to Christianity, and just straight up pogroms. So Ferdinand and Isabella were awful people, like people who by every like metric deserve to be on this podcast. And they would come to think that Columbus was a fucking monster.
Oh my God. Like,
that is the person we're talking about. We are talking about Spanish Inquisition people.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
For our listeners who may not know what that is.
Yeah.
Do you have a quick rundown of the Spanish Inquisition?
It's exactly what I said. We could do a whole episode about the Spanish Inquisition. But it's like, it was like a period where under the process of the unification of Spain, a bunch of agents of the Catholic Church were converting people to Christianity using methods like burning people alive and torturing people. And at the very best, you would be exiled. But for the most part, it was just like torturing people into either converting or until they die.
Okay.
It was real bad.
A downer is a very mild way of saying it, but Jesus Christ, yeah.
It was one of those things that's so evil and so bad that it's like a joke nowadays, you know? So when Columbus first approached Ferdinand and Isabella with his plans in 1486, their advisors basically just said the same thing that John II's advisors say. They turn him down, but Ferdinand and Isabella do start giving him an annual salary as a sailor, maybe to kind of keep their options open and maybe also to encourage him not to take their idea to someone else.
Yeah.
So like their advisors are like, there's no fucking way that journey is less than 3,000 miles. But they're also like, but if it is, we don't want him to go to England and be like, I'm going to do this for you. So we're like, we're going to give you money so that maybe you're kind of loyal to us.
It's like a retainer fee kind of thing.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they're not explicitly saying don't go to somewhere else, but they're also saying like, we're paying you to be a sailor for us, for our Navy. And like,
just
maybe
a silly
you don't
little sailor.
Just a silly little sailor, Columbus.
Just a silly little sailor, Jerry.
Not that being the subtitle for this.
Yeah, silly little sailor.
He was a silly little sailor. Our silly little boy.
Okay, so now in my head, like I'm imagining Christopher Columbus, like in all those like historic paintings, but now he's wearing like a little white and blue sailor outfit from like the 50s.
No, like a like
like a little cartoon Donald Duck thing or something.
Donald Duck. Nor.
Or Daffy, whatever it was.
I'm imagining, you know, those cute Tumblr animations of like characters from Hamilton, aka people from history who were slave owners. Who it's like, and this is Thomas Jefferson. She's a trans icon. She has a girlfriend. I'm imagining that, but with I'm imagining Catboy Christopher Columbus.
Yes,
basically.
Catboy Christopher Columbus.
Meow.
Cat, Sailor Boy, Christopher Columbus on Tumblr, and a whole bunch of slavery apologists are like, but what if he was queer?
But what if he was queer, though? Then wouldn't he need to do what he needed to do to survive under capitalism? Like,
queer icon Christopher Columbus.
No, everyone on this show has been named a queer icon at this point.
I know, we really
just because I like bad people.
We give it out way literally. The term has lost all meaning.
I am saying, if you don't approve of everything that Christopher Columbus does from here on out, you are a homophobe and you are problematic.
You heard it here.
Us retro gaying Christopher Columbus. Like,
oh, that was good. He was in a polycule with his entire crew.
Oh God. Not polyamory married and sailing.
Oh, I gotta remember that one. We came up with so many lessons.
Don't worry, bestie, it'll be in the episode.
We're all going the fuck to hell. Yep. So, despite that, in
1489. Oh my God, I literally have dyscalculia, besties. Probably. I'm self-diagnosed.
Christopher Columbus does go back to John II with his plans again, and he's turned down again. He's nope, still sounds like a bad idea, bestie.
He just keeps applying for this job that doesn't exist, and they're like, get out of here.
It's like, it still sounds just as far.
Like, yeah, we're still pretty sure your math is still off. You haven't updated any of those calculations?
This is a tactic he uses a couple of times in his life where he's like, maybe if I just ask again, it'll work this time. And it doesn't.
He's like, but come on.
Can I do it now? Now? Yeah. How about now? Now? Can I go now?
What if I'm just really annoying?
Like, come on, just let me go. Okay. Come on, just
give me
go.
Money to go away.
I'm not touching you. He's like, his fingers just like hovering an inch above as
I'm not face. Touching like, you. It's like such a, I'm sorry, but that is such a bonkers thing that I forgot that people did. It was just like, it's literally like the most, it's like,
oh, I remember doing that to my brother and sister all the time.
Legit, and they did it to me. That's harassment. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not touching you. Like, you can't actually say anything. You can't tell on me because until I touch you, it's not assault. And it's like, I will spit in your eye. Like, how about that?
And the contemporary version of that is now people coming into my subtweets and telling me that my father doesn't love me. Like, listen.
Listen, you don't know him. He thinks I'm amazing.
Shut up.
I'm his little girl. What are you talking about?
Get out here, you silly little sailor.
I think you guys might be on to something because, like, sometime in late 1491 or early 1492, he enters renewed discussions with Ferdinand and Isabella, and he seems to convince Isabella. So he might have just, like, worn her down. She might have been like, all right, you annoying little piece of shit. I'll give you some money.
She's like, fine, go.
Get in your boat and die.
She probably was hoping he'd die.
If you promise to get on your boat and sail this impossible distance, I will give you the money. And I will never have to hear from this, like, 3-foot-tall, little annoying little shithead again.
And in her head, she's like, well, he's bad at math, so they won't bring enough food. He's definitely going to die up
there. They expected him to die, 100%. Yeah.
This makes so much sense because they only had 3 ships. Like, Isabella was like, get this annoying freak away from me. I hope he dies. He was offered 10% of whatever gold and spices he could bring back to Spain. But again, like, this new headcanon I've got, she's like, sure, you can have 10% of whatever you bring if you just get the fuck out of Spain right now.
Just go. Just fucking leave.
Take 3 dumb ships.
I support her.
So we all know this next part. Mandy and I know this next part. On August 3rd, 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue.
Yeah.
Aboard the 3 ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
I'm like, which ocean is the blue one?
Which, okay. Yeah, like, your theory is making more and more sense, because at least two of those ships were, like, shoddily built, like, in the lead up to, like, leaving. Like, they were specifically built for this journey, and it was, like, get this shit done fast. So I really think it was, like, Isabella was, like, get the fuck out of my country, please.
And please never come back.
Please die on your way to Japan, you freak. You fucking weebo. Weeabo, yeah. Whatever, however it's pronounced.
As the ships sailed away, she was just on the shore like, and that's done. Gotta go back to torturing people.
Enjoy your body pillow, you freak.
He wouldn't have a body pillow with like a Japanese girl on it.
No.
I apologize for making Isabella of Spain sound cooler than she is. I just stan a girl boss. So... On October 12th, 1492, Columbus and his crew landed on an island whose original Taino name was Guanahani. Columbus renamed it San Salvador, which is what it is known as today. It is the Bahamian island of San Salvador. The Taino people who inhabited the island immediately came out to greet their strange new visitors, bringing them food, water, and gifts. Columbus wrote, "They brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears and many other things, which they exchanged for glass beads and hawk's bells. They willingly traded everything they owned. They were well built with good bodies and handsome features. They do not bear arms and do not know them, for I showed them a sword. They took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. They have no iron. Their spears are made of cane. They would make fine servants. With 50 men, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want." So he was like, look at these kind people.
Look at these nice people. I can't wait to enslave
them. Let's make them slaves. Jesus. Yeah.
Imagine that being like your first thought. Like, wow, they're really nice.
Your first thought.
They'll never fight back.
They're so sweet. They would make such good slaves.
sweet summer child.
Yeah. Like, how is, like... Yeah, it's you're sick fucking freak.
Absolutely fucking disgusting. Mm-hmm. Columbus communicated with the Taino mostly through signing and gestures, because obviously they couldn't understand one another. Yeah. They didn't speak a European language. Quote, "Many of the men I have seen have scars on their bodies. And when I made signs to them to find out what happened, they indicated that people from other nearby islands came to San Salvador to capture them. They defend themselves the best they can. I believe that people from the mainland come here to take them as slaves. They ought to make good and skilled servants, for they repeat very quickly whatever we say to them. I think they can very easily be made Christians, for they seem to have no religion. If it pleases our Lord, I will take six of them."
Oh my God.
They did have a religion, BT Dubs. But.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
"If it pleases our Lord, I will take six of them to your highnesses when I depart in order that I may learn their languages." So the people that he's referring to that came to like take them as captors,
yeah,
were the Caribs, where the Caribbean islands get their names from. Mm-hmm. And he kind of and yes, they like warred with the Caribs a lot, and sometimes the Caribs would take like Taino women specifically in the way that like indigenous tribes do. Like sometimes they war with each other and stuff. But his like what he takes out of this is like, oh, there's another group here that like regularly subjugates them. This means that they're easy to subjugate.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. That what he took from that was like, oh, okay. So that works then?
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
It's like, oh, like, they can do that. We can definitely do that. He also did horrible things to the Caribs, like.
Oh, I'm sure. And that's the bit about like, oh, well, they don't have a religion, ergo they'd be good Christians. It's like, well, I bet they did have very important religious practices. They just didn't fit into that very like, what do they call that? Monolithic? No, not monolithic.
Monotheistic.
Thank you, monotheistic.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were like, I don't see any churches with crosses, so they don't have religion.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely didn't have a monotheistic religion. I will also say, like, context for Columbus's world, like, at the time, so this is, like, pre the transatlantic slave trade, obviously, but this is, like, when this is starting up, and he will contribute to that. So, like, at this time, it is, according to the Pope, it is illegal to enslave Christians, but non-Christians are fair game. So to say, like, we can either convert them to Christianity or we can buy them as slaves if they don't want to convert.
Yeah.
So he's like already kind of like setting the stage for that.
Yeah.
Like he's like, oh, they seem like really rife for Christianity. And, you know, like any of the ones that don't want to be converted, we can make some money off of.
It just shows the fact that he did not see them as human.
Absolutely the fuck not.
Like immediately sees them as a commodity. Like the way that if you went to an island and you found like a bunch of like very efficient like beasts of burden, you would have the same conversation. Like, oh, I saw some other people come over and they took some of these animals and they brought them back. And so they must be using them in their like farming practices or whatever. Like such a disgusting, like literal piece of shit. Obviously this is known.
It's like if you found out you were like a wizard and like in this wizarding world, you found out that there were these like elves who like did everything for everybody. And like everybody was like, it's fine. They like doing everything for everybody. So like they can continue to be your slaves.
They like literally fucking love it. It's their favorite thing.
Don't
try to free them, like, they'll be upset.
These other people enslave them. So you like write home to your family and you're like, there's slaves here. And it's like pretty chill.
Apparently they love it.
They love being enslaved here. Columbus also noted that the Taino people wore jewelry with small ornaments of gold. So he took several of them as prisoners and insisted that they lead him to the gold, as you do.
Oh my God.
With his new prisoners, Columbus sailed to, quote, an island off the coast of China that we now know as Cuba.
You really said a geography, huh?
He was so smart, you guys.
Silly little sailor. Okay,
credit where credit is due. I will say, so Columbus didn't know shit about geography and didn't know shit about math, which is why he fucked up so badly. He did know shit about the trade winds, which is why he made it to the Americas alive. He would have died in the middle of the Atlantic if he didn't know anything about the trade winds. But he knew, like, he managed to calculate that, like, he could follow the trade winds to what he thought was Asia, and it led him to the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he sailed to Cuba and then to what is now known as Hispaniola. God, I'm going to try to say the Taino word for Hispaniola. It was either known as Quisqueya, Q-U-I-S-Q-U-E-Y-A, or Ayiti, A-Y-I-T-I. I'm so sorry if I'm pronouncing either of those wrong, but it is in a dead language. So on that island is where he observed bits of gold in a river and was presented with a gold mask by one of the indigenous chiefs. So on Hispaniola, Columbus and his crew built a fort called Navidad, or Christmas, out of the remains of the Santa Maria, which had run aground.
Not them driving their ship onto the shore.
And he left 35 crew members there and took his remaining crew and some indigenous prisoners back to Spain with him aboard the Pinta and the Niña.
So the 35 that he left behind, was that to establish a colony or did he just not like them and left them behind? He's just
like, bye, girls.
He's like, we don't have enough room for everybody on the two ships that are left.
So he planned on coming back. Okay. He was basically like, I'm gonna take some slaves and some gold back and I'm going to show them that we can make money in Asia and they'll give me more money and I'll come back with more people and more money. You guys stay here while I go get more money.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
When the weather turned cold as they were sailing back, many of the Taino prisoners died. These were people who lived in the Caribbean. Many of them straight up like just didn't wear clothes or wore like very little clothes because they lived in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Like they they didn't have to.
Why would you?
Very close to the equator. Right. Yeah, it doesn't.
It would be cold. Like counterproductive to be wearing like a bunch of fucking clothing. Right.
They never experienced cold. Like most of their clothing was like ornamental. It wasn't like to right. keep themselves warm.
Yeah.
And it's not like the Spanish were going to give them clothes. Mm-hmm. There was not the first expedition, but there was one expedition where they tried to transport 500 slaves back. And on the route, over 200 died.
Oh, my God.
And the rest of them died shortly after arriving in Spain.
Jesus.
Fuck off.
Like, they just straight up
the fuck?
Could not handle the change in climate. And also the diseases given to them by Europeans.
Yeah. And how, yeah, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that didn't help. Yeah.
So I'm going to quote Columbus again to Ferdinand and Isabella. He wrote, "Hispaniola is a miracle. Mountains and hills, plains and pastures are both fertile and beautiful. The harbors are unbelievably good, and there are many wide rivers, which the majority contain gold. There are many spices and great mines of gold and other metals." He was lying.
Yeah.
He was lying to try to get more money.
He's just lying. He's making shit up.
He saw a tiny bit of gold.
Just mountains of gold.
He was like upselling himself. He was like, there's so much fucking gold. He saw a little bit of gold in somebody's bracelet once.
Yeah. It's like when I stub my toe and then I think I'm literally dying and tell everybody about how hurt I was. Like, yeah.
I went to the hospital.
I could have lost that.
I'm lucky to be alive. I'm going to have a limp forever. I could have lost the toe and the whole foot.
The Indians, as Columbus called them, and as Columbus believed they were, quote, "are so naive and so free with their possessions that no one who has not witnessed them would believe it. When you ask for something they have, they never say no. To the contrary, they offer to share with anyone." He asked Ferdinand and Isabella for more financing, and in return, he would bring them from his next voyage, quote, "as much gold as they need and as many slaves as they ask." So the Taino that he, like, the Arawak peoples that he first ran into, the Taino, were a very collective culture.
Yeah.
Collectivist culture. Mm-hmm. And because of that, when they saw strangers arrive on their shore, when they saw these strange aliens that kind of looked like them, they were like, what can we do to help you? We will give you anything you need. Do you need food? Do you need water? How can we help you? Oh, I see. You have pretty beads. We'll trade you some of our pretty beads for your pretty beads. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
They were just being good hosts.
Right. They're being good neighbors. Like,
Columbus saw that and was like, oh, we can fuck these people over.
Yeah. Like exploiting these people is going to be so easy because they don't know how fucking horrible our culture is and like how disgusting we all are.
These suckers.
These suckers don't know we're horrible. Like,
so for Columbus's second voyage, he was outfitted with 17 ships and over 1,200 men. So he left like initially with 3 ships and like what? 40 people.
Yeah.
For the second voyage, they were like, oh, fuck, you made it and you made it back. We're going to give you some people. Ferdinand and Isabella wanted golden slaves, but only slaves that couldn't be converted to Christianity. Mm-hmm. Again,
yeah.
They were like, we're woke. We are progressives. We're liberals. Oh my God. So like, don't bring us slaves if they believe in God. Like, obviously, those are real people. But like, if people don't believe in God, like, you can bring us them.
Mm-hmm.
From a write-up in the Los Angeles Review of Books, quote, "as pagans, the Caribbean islanders occupied an ambiguous category. If they were deemed collectively hostile or otherwise unfitted to the gospel, they could be legally enslaved. But not if they were susceptible to conversion. Isabella insisted that the Indians be counted as her vassals and potential Christians, not as the Portuguese had classified Africans." So at the same, like parallel to this was around the same time that Portuguese people started enslaving Africans, what would lead to the transatlantic slave trade and slavery in the United States. And Isabella was basically like, we're better than that. We're not going to just be like rounding up these non-white people en masse and enslaving them. We're only going to do that to the non-Christians.
Yes.
Obviously, because
yeah. mm-hmm. she was a woman of principle.
Yeah. She was a woke queen. She was a girl boss. She was a feminist icon.
She voted blue, like all like straight down the ticket.
I'm with her. Like she was like, I'm not gonna be like those fucking disgusting Portuguese. However, as Christians and servants of the Spanish crown, even the Taino people who could be converted and therefore could not be made slaves could be forced to labor, producing gold as a means of paying the taxes now levied on them by their new monarchs.
Oh my God.
So they were slaves. They were slaves, everybody. But they are Spanish citizens now, so they have to start paying their taxes.
So they have to pay their taxes. Yeah. Yeah. Don't be lazy.
They're not slaves. They're not slaves.
You know, earn your keep, earn your part. You're a proud Spanish citizen now and earn your keep.
I just want to reiterate, they're not slaves. They're not slaves.
They're totally not slaves.
They just have to start paying their taxes now as Spanish citizens.
Mm-hmm.
When Columbus and his second crew arrived back at Fort Navidad, they discovered that the Taino had killed the 35 crew members Columbus had left on the island because in his absence, they had formed gangs and roved the island looking for gold and also abducting and raping Taino women and children. God.
Jesus.
So the incredibly peaceful Taino were like, oh, we're not so peaceful anymore now yeah. that you've raped our kids.
Yeah, which fair. Like, fucking fair.
We're going to slit your fucking throat.
Yeah, I would do the same.
Like the assumption that they like don't understand how to fight because they didn't needlessly attack people the second they saw them is like
right.
It's such a stupid fucking thing to think. It's like, do you not think mm-hmm. that at any point, like while living like around wildlife, that you would need to learn to defend yourself when there's like other yeah. like people come and kidnap them from like other areas, right? Like they obviously,
yeah, they know how to fight. Like
they know how to fight.
Thing to think, and there's like 35 men. Like
they don't know what a sword is, but if there's 35 of you who are raping their children and a million of them,
yeah, exactly,
they're gonna fucking kill you.
Yeah.
Even if they have to do it with their bare hands.
Literally, even an animal would mm-hmm. kill you.
Yeah.
Like a pig would kill you yeah. if you came after yeah. their kids.
Dude, literally. Like,
honestly, a goose. like these people are so like, oh my God. The way that their racism made them like so fucking overconfident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like so unbelievably like, we can survive here 35 people and just like torture them and kidnap.
Yeah. And do whatever we yeah. want. And they won't even yeah, care. Like, no, obviously they're going to care.
The dehumanizing is so obvious because they're like, yeah. these docile yeah. people would never hurt us. And it's like, well, I mean, if you rape mm-hmm. their kids, like, yeah, they're still, yeah. people, they will. They'll still yeah. fucking strangle you.
If you give them a reason,
yeah.
they'll hurt you. Like, if you give them that good of an excuse, like, yeah, obviously they're going to hurt you.
Yeah.
Because you hurt them first. Like, fuck
well,
you.
I wish they'd never come there. I'm sorry that they did the things that they did, but knowing that all that happened, I'm glad they were fucking murdered.
Yeah.
It's gonna get so much worse, Kaylin.
Oh.
This story is not even close to over yet.
Mm.
So the fact that like this all happened while Columbus was back in Spain sort of makes it sound like raping was only something that Columbus's crew did in his absence.
Yeah.
But it was very much not. And it very much continued under his second crew. And yeah. it was very much encouraged by Columbus, who frequently emphasized the fact that the indigenous people he encountered were very beautiful in order to highlight their value as sex slaves.
Oh my God.
Mm.
Michelle de Queno, a crew member aboard Columbus's second expedition, wrote, "While I was in the boat, I captured a very beautiful woman whom the Lord Admiral Columbus gave to me. When I had taken her to my cabin, she was naked, as was their custom. I was filled with a desire to take my pleasure with her and attempted to satisfy my desire. She was unwilling, and so treated me with her nails that I wished I had never begun. I then took a piece of rope and whipped her soundly, and she let forth such incredible screams that you would not have believed your ears. Eventually, we came to such terms, I assure you, that you would not have thought she had been brought up in a school of whores.
Jesus fucking Christ.
What the fuck?
Just gloating about...
About raping a woman.
Raping a woman repeatedly until she became his
until she sex slave. She was tired of fighting and just wanted the pain to stop. Like,
and this was something that they mm-hmm. did repeatedly. One of his big slavery exports was specifically mm-hmm. the women and children.
That's disgusting.
For sex slaves, like both to Spaniards and Portuguese that he brought to the Americas, and to for Europeans when he brought them back home. The ones that he brought back home wouldn't live for as long because they'd usually succumb to diseases. But he brought mm-hmm. a lot of sex slaves back. That was like one of his primary exports. In a letter to Doña Juana de la Torre, Columbus himself wrote, "There are plenty of dealers who go about looking for girls. Those from 9 to 10 are now in demand, and for all ages, a good price must be paid."
What the fuck?
So 9 and 10-year-old sex slaves.
Jesus Christ. I hate this man so much.
Yeah. This is...
I think he's the worst person who's been on this podcast.
Yeah. I think he is.
Oh, absolutely.
It's... Again, like, I couldn't possibly get into all of the atrocities that he's committed.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. there's so much.
There's so much.
But I was crying, doing the research for this. It was horrible.
Yeah, it's fucking horrendous.
Yeah.
Fair. It's disturbing. It's really a real level of the dehumanization and just doing that to literal children. Like, it's bad to do that to anyone, obviously, but babies.
A 9-year-old is in the fourth grade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A baby.
Hasn't even gone through puberty yet. Like, that's... It's just fucking horrific.
Absolutely fucking disgusting. So I'm going to send you an illustration of a Taino female chief in chains from the time.
That sounds horrible.
Yeah. Just to illustrate some of this.
Sure is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, I'm going to read a very big quote now. "Now from his base on Haiti, Columbus sent expedition after expedition into the interior. They found no gold fields, but had to fill up the ships returning to Spain with some kind of dividend. In the year 1495, they went on a great slave raid, rounding up 1,500 Arawak men, women, and children, and put them into pens guarded by Spaniards and dogs, then picked the 500 best specimens to load into ships. Fuck. Of those 500, 200 died en route. The rest arrived alive in Spain and were put up for sale by the archdeacon of the town, who reported that although the slaves were naked as the day they were born, they showed no more embarrassment than animals. Columbus later wrote, 'Let us in the name of the Holy Trinity go on sending all the slaves that can be sold.' But too many of the slaves died in captivity. And so Columbus, desperate to pay back dividends to those who had invested, had to make good on his promise to fill the ships with gold. In the province of Chicao on Haiti, where he and his men imagined huge gold fields to exist, they ordered all persons 14 years or older to collect a certain quantity of gold every 3 months. When they brought it, they were given copper tokens to hang around their necks. Indians found without copper tokens had their hands cut off and bled to death."
Jesus.
The Indians had been given an impossible task. The only gold around was in bits of dust garnered from the streams. So they fled, were hunted down with dogs, and were killed.
It's fucking disgusting.
It's just like...
there's like no humanity in it whatsoever. It is like the ugliest possible thing. And it's...
it's one of the most horrible things I've ever read.
Like, I can't even imagine... like, it's impossible.
Literally impossible.
And this is not in my notes, but this is like... one of the huge arguments that's made about a lot of the people on our podcast, but about Columbus specifically nowadays, is that you kind of like can't judge people in the past to our modern standards. And that justification of Columbus's actions just does not stand to scrutiny for reasons that I'll get to here, because people at the time thought that what he was doing was horrific. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The king and queen of Spain, who were monsters, thought that what he was doing was horrific, mm-hmm. to the point that they arrested him. He is like, not to draw out a Hitler comparison.
Do it.
But he's on par. He's on par.
Yeah.
He's literally on par. He's killed, I think his body count is as high. And the atrocities that he committed in the Americas cannot even be quantified, because mm-hmm. we don't have records good enough.
And, you know, I'll throw this out there. Even if people of the day, like in his own society, were like, no, it was completely fine. Like, even if no one ever called him a monster in his own society, he was a monster to the people he enslaved. Like, you can't still, their standard was definitely, you're a fucking monster. So in his time period, there were people who definitely thought he was a monster, regardless of like what society they were in.
Who aren't here to defend themselves.
Who cannot defend themselves now. We're genocide. Like, fuck him and fuck anyone.
I never take that argument to heart.
Yeah, I hate that argument so much.
Like,
anyway,
it is not something like the things that you're talking about are things that all you would have to do is look at somebody. Like, people use that about, especially about slavery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, if you hear a human crying out in pain, like, if you hear even an animal crying out in pain, because if you don't think, like, if you lived back then, you didn't think Black people were people. Like, I can't even watch a commercial where like a dog has a thorn in its paw without crying. Like, there, if you were able to completely shut off your humanity in that way, to like, to support the wide scale torture and abuse,
you are a monster
of literally anything, any sort of living creature. I can't, like,
you are a monster. No, like,
yeah, exactly. Like,
straight up.
And I'm maybe this makes me a little bit of a naive whatever here, but like, I believe that the depths of human empathy are kind of universal. And I think that no matter what time period you live in or what society you live in, there's always people who are going to recognize that something is wrong. So the idea that, in any period where this horrible thing happened, you can't judge it by modern standpoints. There were people there that knew it was wrong too. I know there was. Yeah. I believe that in my heart of hearts. And maybe that means a little naive sometimes, but I don't care.
Because there's always opposition.
There's always opposition.
Yeah, it's not even always believing it. It's not even believing it in your heart of hearts, because there were actually people speaking out against this at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I only believe that argument stands up to scrutiny. And like, at the time of this recording, our most recent episode had like a woman in the 19th century who believed in like positive eugenics, like people making good love matches and therefore they'll have healthy babies. And like, I'm like, okay, I'll judge her by the standards of her time, because she hadn't seen like sterilization as part of eugenics. Like, she was only like, oh, if people who love each other get married, then the human race will be better. Like, not,
yeah,
you know?
I think the standards of our time thing is like, it can be applied to thoughts. I think not to actions.
Yeah,
that is always been my,
if you see
yes.
real people suffering, like, you are no longer free.
Like, if you just weren't smart enough to, like, logically follow through, like, what would happen if you implemented eugenic policies, like, that's one thing. But, like, literally seeing a human suffering
this is a theory.
In front of you.
Theory is not praxis.
It's not. Is the opposite of based, actually.
So, some of the indigenous Caribbeans, like the Caribs that I mentioned before, who were considered, in fact, the term Carib that we kind of like refer to their tribe as now was like the word for warrior. So they were like considered warriors. They were actually pretty effective at fighting off European attacks, and the Caribs would continue to fight off European attacks for the next several centuries.
Good for them.
The Taino, however, were... They essentially started committing mass suicides in order to escape enslavement.
Jesus.
Oh, fuck.
So from Lawrence Begreen's Columbus, The Four Voyages, quote, "The Indians destroyed their stores of bread so that neither they nor the invaders would be able to eat it. They plunged off cliffs, they poisoned themselves with roots, and they starved themselves to death. Oppressed by the impossible requirement to deliver tributes of gold, the Indians were no longer able to tend their fields or care for their sick, children, or elderly. They had given up and committed mass suicide to avoid being killed or captured by Christians and to avoid sharing their land with them, their fields, groves, beaches, forests, and women, the future of their people." After Columbus's third voyage in 1498, reports came back to Queen Isabella of Columbus's continued abuses of both natives and colonists who had moved to the New World. Isabella had him arrested, brought back to Spain in chains for investigation, and definitively stripped him of his governorship. So he had been awarded with, like, basically like a knighthood and been made a governor of the New World. And she was like, "I'm going to take all your titles from you because this is fucked what you've been doing."
Yeah.
Even to, like, the Spaniards that, like, moved out there as colonists, he would, like, as like he treated the natives much worse, obviously, but even Spaniards who like stepped out of line or criticized him and stuff, he would like cut their noses off.
Jesus.
And
like, Jesus.
Yeah. He was a fucking tyrant. He was one of the most disgusting people who ever lived. So those were people that he considered human beings.
Yeah.
Like the natives he treated much worse because he considered them like less than dogs.
This sounds like stories of like pirates you would hear. Like, it's like very
pirates
much...
were much better than him.
Much yeah, better I was about him. To say, like, but like in actuality, pirates were like way more fucking chill.
Good news, he never recovered his titles.
Good.
But bad news, he was soon set free by Ferdinand, who also financed a fourth voyage to the New World.
Fuck you, Ferdinand. What the fuck?
So historian Bartolomé de las Casas was so horrified by what he saw in the New World that he ended up becoming a Dominican friar and spending the remainder of his life fighting against slavery and for the rights of indigenous people.
Good.
Las Casas's father had been a member of Columbus's second expedition, and Bartolomé emigrated to Hispaniola with his father in 1502, initially fully participating in the colonization of the West Indies. So, you know, he's not a woke king. He just like had a change of heart. And the he participated in the encomienda system that rewarded conquistadors. It was basically like a system for Spanish conquerors that was like, if you go out and you conquer enough, we'll give you enough like money and slaves to set up your own little colony and be your own little fucking tyrant. In the New World. So he participated in that at first, but in 1515, he renounced the whole system. Was that your cat?
He was so loud just now. Wow.
Oh my gosh. I don't think I've ever heard him speak.
No, me either. Hi, Angus.
Angus, are you saying I fucking hate Columbus?
You so like disturbed from the stories.
Look at sweet boy.
Oh, sweet boy.
He's
we needed
sad.
A cat moment, I think. I think
he's
we needed
sad
a cat
about
break.
Everything that's happening. And he's like, I need a little cuddle.
He's like, okay. Aw, sweetie. Thank you for the visit. Oh, look at his little feet.
I did need this.
I think
he's
you needed
so
that.
He's so velvety.
He's so sweet.
He's actually like so soft for no reason. And he always smells like so wonderful.
Aw, sweet baby.
What a king. So he came out in 1502, but in 1515, Las Casas renounced the system. He gave up his indigenous slaves and he started advocating on behalf of indigenous people of the New World to Spain's King Charles II, because by 1515, Ferdinand and Isabella were dead.
Good.
So I'm going to read some Las Casas quotes, and they're bad.
Ooh.
Las Casas wrote of the backbreaking labor he witnessed the indigenous people being forced to do on Cuba. Quote, "Mountains are stripped from top to bottom and bottom to top 1,000 times. They dig, split rocks, move stones, and carry dirt on their backs to wash it in the rivers, while those who wash gold stay in the water all the time, their backs bent so constantly it breaks them. And when water invades the mines, the most arduous task of all is to dry the mines by scooping up pans full of water and throwing it up outside."
Oh my God.
"And while the men were made to toil in the mines, Las Casas reported that the women were made to toil in the fields, planting thousands of cassava plants by hand. Quote, thus husbands and wives were together only once every 8 or 10 months.
Oh my God.
And when they met, they were so exhausted and depressed on both sides, they ceased to procreate. As for the newly born, they died early because their mothers, overworked and famished, had no milk to nurse them. And for this reason, while I was in Cuba, 7,000 children died in 3 months.
Jesus.
Some mothers even drowned their babies from sheer desperation. In this way, husbands died in the mines, wives died at work, and children died from lack of milk. And in a short time, the land, which was so great, so powerful and fertile, was depopulated. My eyes have seen these acts so foreign to human nature, and now I tremble as I write."
That is so fucked up.
So this was...
Jesus.
This was a man... I have to reiterate, this was a man who, like, lived through, like, the Spanish Inquisition, yeah. Who was like, mm-hmm. "The things I saw in the New World were so horrible, they make me tremble."
Mm-hmm.
7,000 babies in 3 months.
The fact that women were so desperate... they would kill their own babies because that's ultimately probably a better fate for them than to slowly starve to death. Like that's
starvation. Yeah.
It's horrific. It's just horrific.
Las Casas reported that sometimes the Europeans would torture indigenous people just for the hell of it. Quote, "They forced their way into native settlements, slaughtering everyone they found there, including small children, old men, pregnant women, and even women who had just given birth. They hacked them to pieces, slicing open their bellies with their swords as though they were so many sheep herded into a pen. They even led wagers on whether they could slice a man in two with one stroke."
Jesus.
"Or cut an individual's head from his body or disembowel him with a single blow of their axes. They grabbed suckling infants by their feet and ripped them from their mother's breasts, dashed them headlong against the rocks. Others, laughing and joking all the while, threw them over their shoulders, shouting, 'Wriggle, you little perisher.'" I'm so sorry to everyone.
Oh, are you okay? God, this has been really hard to research this. Holy fuck. That, I mean, there's no words.
It's, and I'm glossing over everything.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't possibly do like everything.
Of course not.
So there's another illustration, that I'm going to share now. I think this is from later. I think this is probably from like the 17th century.
Jesus.
But it illustrates, some of the things that they were doing.
Ah.
Yeah, all of this will be on Instagram for anybody who hates themselves.
Is Instagram going to allow this? Like,
You can do a thing on Instagram, I think, where it, like, it, almost like how you can do it on Twitter where it's, like, sensitive material, like a little content thing. I think you can do that to, like, blur it out. Or you can also always do, like, a the first slide can be, like, hey, just a heads up. When you slide, when you swipe to the right, you're going to see some stuff. Like, we can warn people ahead of time. Because I see people do that sometimes on Instagram if they're going to show, like, a pet injury or something. They say, hey, just so you know, if you go to the right, you're going to see my cat's bloody eye or something. That might be a good idea for this episode.
This is so fucked up.
I will do that. And I will I said in the last episode that our entire podcast is a trigger warning, but I will be adding content warnings
this is,
to this episode in particular. This is the first episode that I've like legitimately gotten upset, both researching it and reading all of it out. Like reading all of it out is it's a visceral experience.
Like, it's awful. I'm somebody who, like, if I watch a movie and somebody gets hurt, I can get very empathetic pains for them. Like, if I see someone get punched in the eye, my eye will hurt, or someone gets their ankle sliced or something. And just hearing you describe all of that, it just made my whole chest just, like, ache. And I can just – obviously, that's not the same as going through that stuff. I'm saying it's just
– it's inconceivable as well. Like, it's so horrible, like –
yeah, it's horrible. It's fucking horrible. And I've been sitting here just...
same.
Yeah.
Having a lot of visceral reactions too. Yeah.
Las Casas was the one of the very first people who came to accuse Columbus of what would come to be known as a genocide, because we didn't have that word yet, stating that the native people of the Caribbean were almost completely wiped out in his own lifetime. Quote,
Jesus.
There were 60,000 people living on the island, including the Indians, so that from 1494 to 1508, over 3 million people had perished from war, slavery, and the mines. Who in future generations will believe this? I myself, writing it as a knowledgeable witness, can hardly believe it. So we don't actually know how many pre-contact Taino people there were. Estimates range anywhere from 10,000 to 1 million. Okay. So it's like a pretty wide margin.
Yeah.
What we do know is that in a period of about 30 years, 80 to 90% of the Taino were wiped out.
Jesus.
Until very recently, it was widely believed that they had been wiped out entirely, but DNA studies of mostly Spanish-speaking diaspora Caribbeans, mostly Puerto Ricans, have indicated ancestry closely related to the ancient Bahamian genome mapped from the tooth of a woman who lived in the region sometime between the 8th and 10th century. And there is some evidence that Spanish... there is some evidence that some Jamaican people are descended from Taino people who fled the Spanish and intermingled and married African slaves brought to the region. So some Caribbeans today identify as Taino, and there are some Taino revivalist communities. But this was a group of people who were essentially wiped off of the map by Columbus and his crew.
Yeah,
either straight up murdered or... they had to flee away and lose everything about their culture.
Yeah.
So a genocide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if Las Casas had had that word at the time, he would have used it. Mm-hmm. In his later years, Columbus demanded that the Crown of Castile give him his tenth of all the riches and trade goods yielded by the new lands as stipulated by their initial agreement. Because he had been relieved of his duties as governor, the Crown did not feel bound by that contract, and his demands were thankfully rejected. After his fourth voyage to the New World, Columbus settled in Seville in 1505, where he continued to petition the crown for his money to no avail.
Good.
Queen Isabella had at this point died, and in 1506, he moved to Segovia, where King Ferdinand's court was at the time, to keep pestering the king for money. He was like, I'm just going to follow you wherever you go, and I'm going to ask you to give me my shit back.
I'm not touching you.
Yeah, literally. And the king kept denying him. When Ferdinand got remarried to a French noblewoman in Valladolid, Spain, Columbus followed them there to continue bothering the king for money. So he was literally just like,
following him all over the country. Like,
Jesus. Little reply guy.
He was a reply guy.
He was so fucking annoying. Yeah. And at the, I God mean, you couldn't just block somebody then. They could just yell at you as much as they wanted. I mean, I guess beheading them is a way of blocking.
You could kill them.
Yeah. Yeah. You should have.
Yeah, I was about to say. That's how you used to block people.
That's the ultimate block.
Ferdinand was too nice.
Yeah.
However, the king of Spain wouldn't have to put up with Columbus's shit for too much longer, because 2 months later, on May 20th, 1506, Christopher Columbus would finally fucking die. Good. At the age of 54.
Oh, he died young. Good.
Not young enough in my book.
Not young enough, but at least not like all those fuckers that left to live to be like 98.
They're like, and 300 years after his birth.
Right. The hatred fueled his body for another 1,000 years of terror. Like, I hate that shit.
Thankfully, in the 15th century, people didn't, or 16th century, I guess at this point, early 16th century, people didn't regularly live to 90 like they do now. Mm.
Yeah.
Today, Christopher Columbus is celebrated in the United States, a landmass he never laid foot on, for being the discoverer of the Americas. Not only is it strange and fallacious to proclaim someone the discoverer of lands that were already inhabited, but the claim is also ahistorical in that Christopher Columbus wasn't even the first European to visit the North American continent, as Norse explorers had maintained North American settlements as far back as the 10th century and for a period of about 500 years. So there's no fucking reason we celebrate this man. He wasn't even the first European to make it here.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy. Friday, November 25th marks this year's Native American Heritage Day. So I wanted to close out this video by remembering the Taino people. The Taino were a group of Arawak that were the primary inhabitants of what is now Cuba, the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, Puerto Rico, the Bahamas, Haiti, and some of the Lesser Antilles. The Taino were a matrilineal culture of male chiefs and sometimes female chiefs who inherited their positions through their mother's line. Taino women exercised a great deal of bodily autonomy and participated in all levels of society and politics. Early European invaders noted the Taino for their incredible generosity and remarked that they were always smiling or laughing. They left behind sculptures, cave paintings, and petroglyphs depicting their histories and complex systems of spirituality that worshipped several ancestral spirits. The Taino also live on in our language. Barbecue, hammock, canoe, tobacco, and hurricane are all derived from Taino words. They also live on through the modern-day Caribbean people who identify as Taino. People like Jorge Baracute Estevez, who fight what he calls a paper genocide. To quote Estevez in an article for National Geographic, after 1533, when Indian slaves were granted their freedom by the Spanish monarchy, any Spaniard who was reluctant to let their Taino slaves go would simply reclassify them as African. The 1787 census in Puerto Rico lists 2,300 pure Indians in the population, but on the next census in 1802, not a single Indian is listed. Using old marriage certificates, baptismal records, and census reports going back to the 18th century, people like Estevez, Mercedes Garcia, and Gypsy Running Cloud are reclaiming the Taino heritage that was stolen from them. Jorge Baracute Estevez again, quote, I'm going to cry reading this. Whenever I contemplate my history and think of the atrocities committed by the Spaniards, I wonder, what were the grandmothers and mothers doing as they watched their children, siblings, and parents slaughtered and raped, their villages pillaged and plundered? They must have prayed hard, as all suffering people do. But what happened to those prayers? Did they vanish in the air like smoke from a campfire? Then it hits me. We are the descendants of their prayers. We've come back to make things right, to tell their story. And I'm just going to close this out with that link from the National Geographic article because it includes a series of portraits of people who are reclaiming their Taino ancestry. And I think it's just – it's a very powerful series of images, and we will link off to them in this podcast and in the notes because I think it's beautiful and I think it's important. And this episode fucking sucked. Fuck Christopher Columbus.
Fuck Christopher Columbus. You made Hoots cry, among many other things.
Several times.
I actually
it's just like monstrous.
I started tearing up. I mean, I got emotional a few times, but right then their quote, that quote you read, yeah. I think the quote in general was really beautiful. But when you said like they were noted for the fact that they were always smiling.
Yeah, that's what got me.
Just thinking about these generous, caring people who were happy to try and help others.
Just being slaughtered.
Just the horrible things were being slaughtered for fun sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, all the reasons were shitty, but just that alone is just like bashing children
against the rocks.
It's disgusting. Yeah. Against rocks and cutting off people's hands.
The inhumanity, the cruelty.
For not getting them gold that didn't fucking exist. Like, Jesus Christ.
These people who he, at least according to Columbus, ran out onto the shore to greet them and bring them gifts and bring them food and water. Like, it wouldn't have been any better if they had slaughtered people who were trying to fight them. But, like, it makes it so much more ironic and so much more heartbreaking that they came out and greeted these alien invaders with kindness and love and were just
and then for
wiped out.
And for those people to have the fucking audacity to compare those people to animals when they came on those shores and just fucking the levels of inhumanity they fucking show, like, fuck all of that. It's just disgusting. This was a hard episode, Hoots, and thank you for your work on it.
Yeah,
I think this was a really hard one, and I do not.
No.
I don't know how you got through it, and I'm really proud of you.
This was the only one where I was not laughing.
No.
I was not laughing doing this one. Like,
No. How could you? It's fucking horrible.
No, and I'm glad you did it, Hoots. Because you, like, very specifically have a way with these topics and these episodes. So thank you for doing it. Because if I had done it, it would not have had the same level of, like, care and respect in it that you clearly put
and I especially
it.
Appreciate how you ended the episode on the people that we should be focusing on. So thank you very much for this one. Here in Respect the Dead, you know, we obviously try to make things lighthearted sometimes and make jokes and whatever, but, like, sometimes you do just have to acknowledge just how fucking horrible
sometimes
people were.
Sometimes you can't.
And that's important. You just can't make a joke out of that because we shouldn't joke about it, really.
Well, it's like not. It's not funny.
Yeah. There's nothing to joke about.
It's literally just,
it's just
not
literally
fun.
Not funny. Yeah.
We're very gifted at finding humor in a lot of things. So we can find humor in like literally like fucking Henry Ford and Coco Chanel.
Yes.
Yeah, I just personally don't find genocide funny. Which is like...
You don't? Weird.
I can find, speaking of, like, Henry Ford and Coco Chanel, I can find racism funny because it's stupid. But, like, this naked view of genocide is just, like, it's so, like, it rots you from the inside. And that's why I was, like, towards the end of, like, my research, I was, like, trying to Google the, like, Taino people to try to find whatever I could. And I was so happy to find that there is, like, people who are reclaiming their Taino heritage. And also that there is, like, a revivalist movement of, like, trying to bring back the culture. Yeah. Because, like, if there is any silver lining to the story – and it's not even a silver line. If there is any joy to mine at all, it is that like, at least in some small way, these people are rising back up mm-hmm. like a fucking phoenix mm-hmm. from the ashes, because they were yeah. all but wiped out. Mm-hmm. And they are not allowing themselves to be completely extinct. And I think that that is something mm-hmm. going into our, as Americans, our very problematic Thanksgiving weekend, that is something that we should be thinking about.
Yeah.
Fuck Christopher Columbus.
Fuck Christopher Columbus.
Fuck Christopher Columbus.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Respect the Dead. You can follow Respect the Dead on Instagram and Twitter at @_RespectTheDead.
If you want to follow us individually, you can find our socials in the show notes. And you should check out our YouTube channels. We don't shit on dead people there as often, but still, we're making tons of cool stuff.
If you enjoyed Respect the Dead and would like to support us, there's a couple of ways to do that.
You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you found us. If you leave us a review, we can read it out on the podcast. Reviews are the best way for new listeners to discover the show. Give us at least 5 stars and then share us with a good friend who likes venting about dead people.
You can also give us some money over on our Patreon. Patreon supporters get some cool bonus content like bloopers from the cutting room floor and even coming up with a fake sponsor ad that we'll read in an episode. It has to be a fake business though, not your MLM, honey.
Thanks so much for listening. Join us every Monday for our next Worm Feast.
I'm Kellen Conrad.
I'm Ailey Mandy.
And I'm Hoots. Bye.
Bye. Bye.